Welcome to Factum Agri, dedicated to New Zealand's primary industry. Each week, I talk with farmers and producers, industry, the science community, and policymakers to hear their stories and views on matters relevant to both our rural and our urban communities. This week on Factum Agri, Professor David Norton joins me to share his views on recent flooding events in Gisborne and the Hawke's Bay. David joins me now. Hello, David. Thank you for joining me today and welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here, Angus. Thanks for inviting me again.
David, I'm keen to get your thoughts on what we have seen in Hawke's Bay in Gisborne recently with the flood damage and, of course, the ongoing aftermath. There has been significant damage by flooding and indeed forestry slash brought down by the flooding. What were your first impressions as the devastation started to become clear?
Yeah, it's a good question, Angus. Look, I need to preface my answer by saying I haven't been up there since both Cyclone Gabriel and the earlier Cyclone Hale. So my knowledge is what I've been, what I've seen in the media and what people I know up there have shared with me. And I'm most familiar with what's happened in Tairawhiti. I haven't really caught up with the slightly more complex situation in Hawke's Bay. But it seems clear to me, and I remember visiting Tolaga Bay back in 2018, I think, after another cyclone event. And look, we're seeing the same sort of damage again. We're seeing substantial amounts of sediment and slash coming out of catchments, many of which are being managed for large-scale pine monocultures for timber, substantial amounts of slash coming down and sediment coming down and having dramatic impacts on obviously productive systems, but also from what I'm hearing and what I understand on aquatic systems and on the marine systems as well. So we're getting quite significant damage offshore.
So what sort of ecological damage are we looking at firstly in some of those hardest hit areas, and what does recovery look like secondly?
Yeah, I mean, ecological damage in terms of the stream systems. I mean, I'm not a freshwater ecologist. I'm a terrestrial ecologist, but clearly those stream systems are being severely impacted in terms of sediment and slash being deposited into them. And I guess the damage offshore will be the same in those inshore marine systems as well. I think, we get cyclones. Cyclones hit New Zealand, every decade or two, and our native forests get hammered by them. But of course, our native forest, we get significant blowdown, and Cyclone Bola is well documented, and others as well have damaged native forests, but native forest recovers and beech trees and podocarp forest regenerates. And we see the forest, coming back again, with plantations of exotic trees for whatever purpose, whether it's carbon or timber, the future pathway is very uncertain, and it's highly likely that those stands after damage from these sorts of cyclones are going to turn into weedy jungles, to be quite honest.
And it's important to remember these weather events aren't new or coming out of the blue, are they? As you say, they do happen from time to time.
Yeah, they're definitely something New Zealanders have, right back. And I mean, if you talk to the people working on history of natural systems and looking at sediment deposition patterns, the east coast of the North Island has got a long history of these sorts of storm events, as I'm sure of other parts of the country. But I think what's also happening now is that, and it's well established that global warming is leading to more intense rainstorm events. The actual frequency of cyclones may even drop, but the intensity of those cyclones that get here is becoming more intense. And I think we're going to see more damage as we move forward in time.
Now, my views on pine trees are well documented, and in particular, carbon farming forests. What do you make of the current rate in which pine trees are being planted in this country? And do you have any concerns about this?
Yeah, I do have concerns. I think, take a step back. I think it's really important that we recognise that pine plantations are critical for New Zealand. We need well-managed pine plantations to provide us with a sustainable supply of timber for building, for construction, for all of those things, for biofuels, for paper manufacture or whatever. And I think well-managed plantations, and as many of our, most of our plantations are really, really important. And I think it's the old saying, right tree, right place, right purpose. And And I think, with production plantation forests, if they're in the right place, that they play a really important role.
They do work well as part of a mixed farming model, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I want to come back to that actually in a minute and talk about diverse rural landscapes, because I think, pine trees have an important role to play. But I think, the other part of your question was around carbon and the use of pines or exotic trees generally as a carbon crop. And I have to confess to have grave concerns about that. And I mean, when I look at the ETS and I look at what they call the permanent category of the emissions trading scheme, to me, permanent, we're talking about, decades and centuries. Look, the reality is carbon dioxide is a half-life in the atmosphere of 120 years, and some of the carbon dioxide that's up there now, and remember, it's increased by 50%. Some of what's up there now is going to be there in several hundred years' time. So when we talk about permanent forests, I just don't get it that pines being planted for carbon are not providing a permanent forest. To me, I'll be quite honest with you. I see them as a money-making venture. Someone has figured out, oh, there's good money to be made in planting pine trees. We'll plant pine trees, we'll harvest the carbon credits, and they'll be great for the next 30, 40 years. And well, I probably won't be around then, the investor thinks, and I've got my money. So
Yeah.
it's very cynical, but that's how I look at it. Yeah.
So what will the likely outcome be to rural landscapes and biodiversity in particular if we continue to plant exotic forests at the rate at which we are, and if they're not carefully managed? And I'm really talking about, as you've just mentioned, large-scale permanent forests at the expense of pasture-based farming systems.
Yeah, so permanence the key word in here, and I think I what worries me is that, and I'll take us back a step and then come back to that again. If we look at what's happened with Cyclone Gabrielle in Tairāwhiti and in the Gisborne area this time around, we're looking at legacies of past bad management decision making. So back when Cyclone Bola came, it was decided to plant up pine trees and catchments where people at the time knew, even foresters at the time knew, that they were the wrong place to plant pine trees because you couldn't harvest them there. If you harvest them, there'd be damage coming on. And then you could argue that the damage that Cyclone Bola occurred was because of even earlier bad land management decisions, clearing native forest, 100 years earlier. And my fear about carbon farming with exotic pine trees is that all we're doing is we're setting up legacies for the future. So, as I said before, they're great now for the investors. They're going to get an income for the next, two, three, four decades. But what happens after that? Who's going to look after the liabilities associated with those forests as they start to break down? And who's going to look after the liabilities if those forests burn down, or, the pests that those forests are going to harbour, and they're going to be a major place for both plant and animal pests, and who's going to manage those into the future? Because the income's gone, in 20, 30, 40 years' time, the income's gone. And I, people talk about, oh, we'll transition them to natives. There is no credible science from New Zealand to suggest that in our environment, that apart from a few situations, that you can transition them to natives unless you invest a substantial amount of money. And I'm seeing no evidence that those people who are proposing and promoting carbon farming with exotic trees are prepared to put the money aside. I mean, I think if they're genuine about transitioning, then they should say, well, look, we'll put half the carbon income, hold it back, put it into some sort of fund, and we'll use that to then manage that transition in the future. It's not happening. And unless that's done, it's ecologically fraudulent, in my mind.
So, do you know who is currently liable for essentially pine tree runoff, which is slash and the associated waste from these trees?
Look, I don't know the legality of it. I do know that after the 2018 storm events in Tairāwhiti, Gisborne District Council took several of the forestry companies to court and the prosecutions were upheld. I think the last one only came through a few months ago and the forestry companies were found to be liable. I think to give the forestry companies credit, I think they have worked hard and I'm sure their management in the last couple of years since that 2018 event has definitely improved. From what I'm hearing, there's been marked improvement. But I mean, with a carbon forest, who's going to be liable for what happens to those in 40, 50 years' time? Anybody's guess. Probably I'd say it's going to be the communities and the ratepayers in rural areas.
Yeah, it doesn't sound too good. Farmers are doing a good job at planting natives, I believe, and increasing biodiversity. They are working hard in that area. Do we need more natives, do you think? And can you talk to the benefits?
Yep. The answer to do we need more natives is a massive yes in capital letters. Look, our environment is well suited to growing native trees. Native trees are adapted to our environment. Of course, they get damaged in storm events. But of course, native forests or native trees and native forests also provide all those other benefits, biodiversity benefits. They're part of, they're part of who we are as people in this country. It's what we relate to. We don't think of pine trees as being part of our heritage. We think about kauri or rimu or totara or beech. They're our heritage. So they're really, really important. And look, you're right. I mean, farmers, I've just been the last 2 days on a farm on Banks Peninsula here. And I mean, farmers are really committed to planting natives and managing natives, both planting and naturally regenerating natives. The problem is at the moment, the way the ETS is structured, it's really hard to get any decent income out of natives because the whole thing is perversely biased towards exotics. And also because we're not recognizing the multiple benefits that natives provide. And I think to me, it's really a policy issue. It's one that we've got to get, government's got to actually sit down and recognize that natives could offer us a huge range of benefits if we were to incentivize and provide the appropriate support for landowners. And landowners are by far the best people to do it, working in catchment groups. They're just ideally positioned. And look, I'll tell you my dream. My dream is to see, Climate Change Commission suggested 300,000 hectares. I reckon we could even do, half a million hectares of new plantings, but also large areas of natural reversion managed properly within working farm landscapes to benefit, both the farms themselves, but also to benefit all of New Zealand. And I think one thing we often forget about is that, our marketing of our products. I mean, at the end of the day, our farm products are what is it, 80% of our export earnings come from primary production. Our access to global markets is going to be increasingly important on us being able to show that we are actually doing the environmental stuff we say we're doing. And I think we've got to be able to both do it and prove we're doing, this environmental work, whether it's in freshwater, whether it's in carbon, or whether it's in biodiversity. And just by the by, all three of those are very tightly linked in my mind. So I think, trees can offer huge amount. They can offer resilience in landscapes by increasing diversity in landscapes. They can provide massive biodiversity benefits. They can be part of our marketing story. They're part of who we are. They can provide work. I mean, I'd love to see jobs for nature. I mean, it's running out, repurposed to be, jobs for tāne, bringing trees back into our landscapes. There's just win-wins for everybody. They can provide income streams as well. There's so many possible benefits that native trees can give us that will be there in perpetuity, and they'll keep providing those benefits without any costs into the future.
So you think farmers should get recognition for the plantings they are doing, which includes sequestration, which would therefore potentially have a benefit or certainly consideration for the ETS moving forward?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. I mean, I think, the ETS needs to be relooked at. I think the way, I mean, part of the ETS, I think, is flawed in that it's basically an excuse for polluters to continue to pollute. And I think that needs to be addressed. But we need to be thinking about the other side of the equation, which is sequestration and what sequestration is about. And it's got to be permanent. It's got to be permanent and long term. And I think we should be rewarding and providing an income for native forests as a permanent long-term carbon sequestration tool to do that, and both for post 1990, but also for pre 1990, if farmers can show that they are making a deliberate decision with an area of regenerating forest or an old, North Island cutover podocarp forest, that they are deliberately excluding livestock, they are deliberately managing goats and pigs and deer to favour carbon and biodiversity, and I think they should get rewarded for that as well because it's all sequestering carbon.
I agree with that. And in terms of policy level, where to from here, do you think? Do you think we're going to see some change? Do you think we need change? And to what level?
Well, we definitely need change. And look, I will talk to any politician, and I've talked to some national politicians today. I talk to Green politicians. I'll talk to Labour politicians. I want everybody to recognise that we can have sustainable rural landscapes that provide a key part of our income as a nation through sustainable farming. But to do that, we need to have native forest as a core part of that. And that native forest can range from hedgerows of native trees, small copses, right up to, catchments that are eroding, planted up, or allowed to regenerate into natives and forming, resilient landscapes. I think we get too caught up with adaptation as being around infrastructure. I think what we should be talking about is resilience, building resilient landscapes that can both help protect people, communities, livelihoods, but also can help sequester carbon, draw down carbon from the atmosphere. And to me, that would be the best outcome for rural New Zealand. Mm. And we're not talking about converting every single sheep and beef farm in New Zealand by any means into native forest. We're just talking about having a land use approach where we have native trees as being a core part of how we use our rural landscapes.
Yeah, of course, farming, and as you touched on earlier, is such a significant part of our export earnings for this country. And of course, we can tell that story from a marketing perspective. And I'm really proud of our farming heritage. And I believe we need cross-party support for long-term policy that will stand the test of time and can't be tinkered with. That is science driven and science led, and that's it.
Yep, I'd love to. And I mean, if I was to do anything, I mean, I'm retired from the university now, but I'm still actively working with farmers. And if I could achieve anything in the next couple of years before I really do try to pull back a little bit, it would be to get that cross-party support to support a major initiative around bringing more native forest into our landscapes as part of an overall approach to how we use our rural landscapes. You know, as I say, it's not about native forest instead of exotic forest. It's not about native forest instead of farming. It's about diverse landscapes. And if we can get a big policy, I mean, forest policy in New Zealand at the moment is, in my mind, is primarily driven by timber production out of exotic pine forests. We need to have forest policy that's thinking about, right tree, right place, right purpose, with a very strong focus on our native trees, providing all of those multiple benefits. I want to see, flocks of tui and kereru in our lowland environments. We can only do that if we've got native forest spread through those areas, integrated and with pest control, but that can be within a working farming landscape. Look, I'll tell you a story. I was Sam Gibson, or Sam the Trap Man, you might know him as, and I'm sure several of your listeners will know Sam. Sam is doing some incredible things in the Waiweka catchment in up and behind Gisborne there. And where they're managing for Theo, for Blue Duck, and for Kiwi, and they're managing on mainly on farmland, but some public conservation land. And he was pointing out to me that some of the best Kiwi country is actually on farmland. The Kiwi are nesting in the bush blocks, but they're out feeding in the pastures at nighttime. I mean, imagine if we're Kiwi doing that throughout all of New Zealand. But we need to have the forest, we need to have the predator control built in, but we need the landowners there to be doing a lot of that work as well, and being proud of it and being part of our story. Imagine selling, prime Angus beef from farms that have viable populations of North Island brown Kiwi. I mean, it'd be an incredible story. And that are sequestering huge amounts of carbon, that would be an amazing story to have.
Absolutely. And then, of course, at the same time, simultaneously sequestering carbon, getting recognition for that, and then farmers getting the recognition in terms of farm gate returns over and above what other nations can produce or what other nations are getting for their product. It's a win-win.
Yep, absolutely. And I think we have, over the last few decades, sadly turned farmers into villains, and we've made them out to be the bad guys. Look, farmers are there. They're on the land 24/7. My impression of farmers is that all the farmers I meet and work with are really passionate about the environment. They want to do this. Either they're not aware of what the values are on their farms, or they just haven't got the time or the financial resources. So we just got to support them. And some of that's going to be financial, but some of it's also just support, just helping them understand what they have and how to better manage it. And again, I'd come back to saying catchment groups are the answer for that. We need far more support through catchment groups.
David, thank you very, very much for your time today.
Oh, you're welcome. We could talk about these issues forever, I suspect. So yeah. Thanks for having me on again, Angus. I look forward to another chat at some point.
I always enjoy having David on the show, as he has a pretty good objective view and understanding of the issues this country faces, particularly with carbon farming. He also understands the importance of the primary sector to New Zealand and how farming is an important part of a diverse landscape. So, policymakers sitting in their offices talking about how they're going to tax farmers, whilst at the same time allow large emitters, both domestically and internationally, to offset 100% of their emissions by dumping their waste onto productive farmland, is in my mind farcical and setting up intergenerational failure. Furthermore, farmers are being targeted through an emissions tax that is wrong and does not account for total carbon being sequestered. I think this is because if the government did recognise sequestration in totality, it would quickly become clear that farming is not the problem it says it is. That's all from me this week. Thank you for listening, and catch you next time.